people who are in their 50s now probably have thought about this before, or maybe they wanted to do it right out of high school. And for whatever reason, maybe they met the person of their dreams and got married and had children, or maybe they didn't think their parents would approve, or maybe there's something else that interested them more at that time and they didn't become a flight attendant. And now they're at a time when retirement is on the horizon and they still want to be part of the workforce and they want to do something fun. And they know that in retirement, they talked about traveling. But as you get older, you don't want necessarily to wait to travel.
Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast, brought to you by Career Pivot. This podcast is where those of us in the second half of life come together to discuss how to repurpose our careers for the 21st century. Come listen to career experts give you proven strategies. Listen to people like you tell their stories on how they repurpose their careers. And finally, get your questions answered. Your host, Mark Miller, has made six career pivots over the last 30 years. He understands this is not about jumping out of the frying pan into a fire, but rather to create a plan where you make clear, actionable steps or pivots to a better future career. Are you ready to repurpose your career?
Welcome to episode 162 of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. My name is Mark Miller, and I'm your host every Monday for discussion on what it's like to repurpose your career. If you're new to this podcast, I want to welcome you to this episode. I am running my annual Repurpose Your Career podcast survey, and if you would be so kind to go to careerpivot.com/podcast survey, which is one word, and take the annual podcast survey. I'd like to know what was your favorite episode of 2019 and give me some feedback on what you'd like in 2020. The link to the survey is right at the top of the show notes, which can be found in your podcast player at careerpivot.com/episode-162. As of February 3rd, I have 25 responses. And given that each episode gets 1,000 downloads in the first 30 days, I'd like 50 to 100. In fact, I just closed out my reader survey right at 100, which is the maximum number that SurveyMonkey lets me have on a free account. So please help me help you by filling out the survey. Now a word from our sponsor, Career Pivot. The Career Pivot membership community continues to help the approximately 50 members who are participating in this project. This is a community where everyone is there to help everyone else out. This is a group of like-minded souls where over half are over 60, a third are over 65 who are figuring out what they want to do in the second half of life and then make it happen. I've priced this so it's very affordable for anyone. Do not let financial considerations get in the way of checking this out. I'm recruiting new members for this next cohort. If you are interested in learning more, please go to careerpivot.com/community. Next week, I have the founders of nextforme.com, Carol McManus and Jeff Tidwell, who will talk to us about their online community and their book by the same name. This week, I have the joy of interviewing Joanne Webb, author of Desire of the Skies, the first book every aspiring flight attendant needs to read. Let me read you her bio. Joanne has been a flight attendant for 19 years. Finding this career path took some missteps along the way. She applied to be a flight attendant a couple of times after graduating college. She was rejected and based on that feeling, stopped pursuing the one career that truly made her feel excited. In the summer of 2000, Joanne wandered into a hat store in New York City after calling on a client. The woman working there selling hats, Trisha, was about 50 at the time, and she mentioned she was going to Paris that night, and she was a flight attendant for Continental Airlines, which is now part of United. Joanne told her that she had applied 3 years before, and they didn't want her. Trisha assured her that wasn't necessarily true. She just needed some coaching. Joanne reapplied at Continental and is now a 19-year flight attendant at United. United and Continental merged. Joanne spent 2 years volunteering with immigrants in Denver with employment services. In doing this, she learned about resumes, interviews, and about the workplace in general from a different angle. Joanne has taken that knowledge from the airline industry and from employment counseling and has created 2 online courses, does private interview coaching, and has written a book called Desire the Skies, the first book ever aspiring flight attendant needs to read. Many of her clients are doing a career pivot. I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast. I have the joy of having Joanne Webb, who is the author of Desire the Skies, the first book every aspiring flight attendant needs to read. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Well, when you contacted me the first time, I went, who in their 50s wants to go be a flight attendant?
I remember that well.
And exactly at the same time, I had just listened to Andy Levine, who has the Second Act Stories podcast, and he interviewed somebody who at 55 retired from Walgreens and became a flight attendant.
I listened to that podcast, yes.
And I went, oh, okay, I don't know as much as I think I do. You know, it's one of these deals, you think you know a lot, and then you realize, and this is particularly true of someone like myself who, you know, I was executive platinum on American Airlines, and I used to travel. I've traveled to 40 different countries and used to think I knew something about it and realized I don't know squat. So let's start out, Joanne. Why would someone in the second half of life want to be a flight attendant?
Well, there are several reasons. People who are in their 50s now probably have thought about this before, or maybe they wanted to do it right out of high school. And for whatever reason, maybe they met the person of their dreams and got married and had children, or maybe they didn't think their parents would approve, or maybe there's something else that interested them more at that time and they didn't become a flight attendant. And now they're at a time when retirement is on the horizon and they still want to be part of the workforce and they want to do something fun. And they know that in retirement, they talked about traveling. But as you get older, you don't want necessarily to wait to travel until, you know, it's like Holland America cruise line or nothing. You might want to start when you still are in that prime of your life. 50s is the new 40s and 40s is the new 20s and so on. But when you're in your 50s, you're still young in today's society. So why not? Why would you not want to be a flight attendant in your 50s?
I don't know. I always remember going flying and getting into a little metal tube and spending hours inside of a little metal tube. And I didn't think that was so much fun.
It's a lot different when you get to walk around on the airplane and you're working. You're not just sitting there and you're not, I never really feel cramped because I can go to the galley or I can go to another galley. On the airplane itself, yeah, it's kind of a job. You know, it's Starbucks in the air, so to speak, or McDonald's in the air, but it's only 2 hours, maybe 4 hours, maybe 6 hours, but whatever it is, the flight ends, you change crews, you get new people, you get to get off the plane and see something new and different and exciting. And like any job, there are downfalls. There's weather delays and mechanical delays and TSA and all that. But any job, any career you pivot to, there's going to be pluses and minuses.
So do these airlines actually hire folks like me who are older?
Absolutely. Every day. In fact, when I got hired, I was 27 at that time. And This was in the year 2000. So if you need help with your math, I'm 46. But when I was hired in 2000, half of my graduating class from training was older than me. And the oldest person was well into her 50s.
So let's dig into one of the things I found fascinating in your book was you broke down the different kinds of airlines and what are the caveats for each one? Why would you want to work for one versus the other? So what are the different kinds of airlines that you could possibly go work for?
Well, each airline, like you've alluded to, is quite different and everyone has their own culture. So in my book, I break it down into about four categories. For the purpose of speaking on a podcast, I did condense it down a little further, and I'm going to give you three different categories of airlines that are available in the United States. The first is the regional, and an example of a regional airline would be Endeavor Air or PSA or Commuter, Mesa Airlines. And some of these you may never have heard of because oftentimes they do business as a United Express or an American Eagle or a Delta Connection. So these are your tiny little tubes, as you mentioned, and there's usually only one flight attendant, and it's often called a puddle jumper, and maybe you go from Cleveland to Chicago to Akron, and then maybe that's one day, and then the next day you go from Akron to Albany to, I don't know, you just do maybe these short little connector cities, and that's part of the system of airlines is what we call in the industry hub and spoke. So that's like connecting passengers to the main hubs. And so that's a regional airline. And another one is called your low cost carrier. And I like to think of these as your fun airlines. And don't let the words low cost scare you away. I actually really like the culture of a lot of these airlines. So low cost airlines are Allegiant, Spirit, Frontier, for example. And those are ultra low cost. And then you have your regular low cost airlines, which are JetBlue and Southwest. And these airlines, you don't get a lot of business travelers. It's mostly people going on vacation. That's why it's a lot more fun. You're going to see a lot of flights between areas like New York, Chicago, Boston, going down to Florida and San Juan and places in Mexico. All for fun. So that's a different type of carrier. And then you have your legacy. And these are the ones that we've probably all been familiarized with. In fact, you mentioned one, American Airlines. The legacy carriers in this country include Hawaiian, Alaska, American, Delta, and United. These are the big five. And this is where you're going to get your international flying and your longer flights. Maybe your LA to New York flights, and you'll see the celebrities. And there's more variety at these airlines overall. And each one in itself is different, very different work cultures, very, very different, and different pay scales at all these different airlines. And there's a lot more flexibility at some rather than others. So there's lots of advantages and disadvantages to each type of airline.
So let's take each one of those and break it down to what are the advantages of the regional carriers versus the low cost versus the traditional air carriers?
Okay, well, I would say the biggest con of a regional airlines, like why you might not want to do a regional, is because they always pay the least. So you're going to be making the least amount of money. And this is a little known fact, and a lot of people may not realize this, but flight crews, including pilots, they only get paid while the aircraft door is closed. So that time that like the flight attendants find helping you to find room for your bag in the overhead, they're not on the clock at that time. So you can expect as a flight attendant to work somewhere around 80 hours a month, and that's or getting paid for 80 hours a month. But we work a lot more than that, actually. So at a regional airline, because the flights are going to be shorter, like I was describing, that you might go from Cleveland to Akron, you're going to be making less money because of that, but also the wage is lower. The advantage of the regionals is that you move up in seniority a lot faster because there's a lot more turnover. So you might be getting better schedules faster if you go regional. And the other great advantage of a regional airline is that they have a lot of crew bases in not so populated areas. So you might actually be able to live in a better cost of living area if you work for a regional airline.
Yeah, one of the things I found fascinating in your book was talking about, you know, who do you work for and which ones you may want to commute versus actually be able to live where you're going to come fly in and out of.
Exactly.
So let's go to the low cost airlines. What's the goodness and badness, the pros and cons?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, I think that they're so much fun. You cannot fly on a low cost carrier and just not have a good time. Any Southwest flight, when they do the safety demo, they're going to be having a blast when they're doing it. I've never been on a low cost carrier and I've never seen the crews just not having the most fun with the passengers. Just they're just in it for the fun. And I love that. Specific airlines that are low cost, Allegiant really, really stands out. They have a different way of doing business where they only do turns. And a turn is another name for a one-day trip. So you might be based in Clearwater, Florida, let's say, and work a flight to Cincinnati, Ohio, which that airport's actually in Kentucky, but for this purposes, we'll do this flight. And then you get to Kentucky and you'll drop the passengers off and then you'll fly back and you'll be in your own bed at night. And Allegiant is great for people who want to be flight attendants but don't want to be away from home for extended periods of time. And even though we're talking about people who are probably in the baby boom generation, we still might be taking care of parents. We might have to help out with grandchildren. And this is a great airline for that because you kind of work like you're a 9-to-5er, but you're actually a flight attendant. So Allegiant is just great for that. And they are hiring. Spirit's great because you don't have to go to them and say, oh, yes, I will pick up my life and I will go anywhere that Spirit Airlines asks me to go. When you apply to Spirit, you apply to a specific base. So you'll apply to Fort Lauderdale or Orlando or Las Vegas. So you kind of know where you're going before you apply, which really takes so much guesswork out of the whole process. And I love Spirit for doing that. And I wish other airlines did that. And then Frontier is so much fun because you recognize Frontier from the animals on the tails of the plane. It's low cost. It's no frills. But again, it's always to destinations where you're having fun. And that's all about what the culture of that airline is all about. And most of these low costs that I've mentioned fly primarily on the East Coast or in like the central time zone. But Frontier, they really concentrate more on the West Coast. So that's another advantage of them. And then JetBlue and Southwest is always ranked highest in employee satisfaction. People who work at Southwest love it. Absolutely love working there. And the disadvantage is it's harder to get hired there. And JetBlue holds a special place in my heart because I consider Astoria, Queens home, which is right near Long Island City. And JetBlue has its headquarters in Long Island City. And it was very exciting. They're one of the newest airlines out there. And they're going to start flying to London. I think by 2021, they'll be flying to London out of JFK and Boston. So now we're seeing low-cost carriers go international, and that's really exciting too.
Okay, so you decide you want to be a flight attendant. How do you go about getting hired or getting trained, or what's the hiring process?
Great question. A lot of people think that they need to get some specific degree or they need to go to a for-profit school to be hired as a flight attendant. That's not true. That is absolutely not true. The qualifications to be a flight attendant, for anyone who wants to be a flight attendant, not just somebody over 50, is you need a high school diploma. You need to be over 21, which I'm sure your audience might be over 21. And
you think so?
I think maybe if you're listening to this podcast, you're over the age of 21. And legal right to work in the United States and to go to all the countries that the particular airline serves. So if you have a green card, you might have to do a little research and obtain some visas. So if you're a U.S. citizen, though, it's pretty straightforward. And you have to have at least 1 year of customer service experience. That's the qualifications to become a flight attendant, and on paper. Going beyond that, you will not be successful in your pursuit if you do not have an absolute passion for the service industry. If there's one thing that everybody needs, it's a passion for the service industry, like to be helpful, to just be the type of person that volunteers to help, whether it's somebody, an older person who needs help putting their groceries in the trunk of their car, or somebody who can't reach something on the top shelf at the grocery store and you're tall and you can help them. If you're not the type of person who just automatically helps, then the career is not for you. But if you're just someone who likes to help people, then absolutely you'd be a great flight attendant.
So, okay, you determine that you've got all the qualifications. How do you go about getting a job?
The first thing that you'll need to do, and this is something that your audience should be aware of no matter what job they apply to, a lot of the application process, and especially in the airline industry, is done using artificial intelligence. And this has advantages and disadvantages. It saves companies lots of money, but it changes the reasons now why we do resumes, why we do so many things when we are acquiring new jobs. So the first thing you'd want to do is you would want to build a resume, and it doesn't have to be on fancy paper from Kinko's or Office Depot or anything like that. Just a basic resume with certain keywords. And the reason for this is your resume, once you submit it to an airline, will be scanned for these keywords. A human will not look at it at first.
We call that an applicant tracking system, or ATS. Everyone's real familiar with that.
I am coming across a lot of people that are maybe have been working in the last time that they changed careers. They didn't have to go through this.
Yes, believe me, I understand.
So I always just want to mention that hiring somebody to professionally do your resume is not needed, because I always want to save people money where I can, that it's really easy to do it yourself. And so you're going to want to have this resume ready. And then you'll pick an airline. And my book is a great resource to read before you decide which airlines to apply to. And when you have these airlines in mind that you're going to apply to, you just simply go to their website and you scroll all the way to the bottom. I've checked. They all do this the same way. You scroll all the way to the bottom, and there's this little icon in small print that says careers. And you click on careers, and then you find if there's a flight attendant opening. And sometimes their application windows are closed, but you'll have to check back on a daily or weekly basis. And you're going to want to find the application for flight attendant. And if you speak another language, you're fluent in another language, you will have an easier time getting hired. So you go and you follow the directions on the website, and there's often a questionnaire asking if you meet the requirements I just went through. And then sometimes you wait a long time, and sometimes things just move along really rapidly. And they will then do one of two things. They'll either send you an assessment, which is a personality test, or they will send you a video interview. And at some point, they will ask you to upload this resume. So when the video interview comes, this is the time when they see you, how poised you are, if you smile naturally, if when technology fumbles around, which happens to all of us, how you handle it. Because even if you mess up on the interview, if they see you handle the technology glitch very well, that's going to look really good for you. And if they like what they see in the video interview, they will do one of two things. They will either invite you to what's called a face-to-face interview, and they will fly you usually to headquarters. And then the other way is they'll have hiring events. And these they do in focus cities, cities where they have a lot of flights and not necessarily headquarters. So either one, somebody is going to have a live interview with you. They're going to sit down and they're going to interview you, and you'll hopefully be there for several hours, and they'll weed people out and you'll see people not come back. And hopefully they'll tell you, okay, you made it to the next round. Go wait in this room. And the longer you stay, the better. And it's a really good sign if after the interview, they ask you to take a drug test. That's a very good sign.
So you better make sure you haven't eaten any poppy bagels that morning.
That's correct. No edibles.
Tell me a little bit more about these hiring windows. Do the different airlines like to batch their hiring, or how does that work?
There's a couple different ways different airlines do it. One of them, which has a headquarters down in Atlanta, they like to do a lot of weeding out before they even look at your resume, or, well, I shouldn't say that, but they like to do the weeding out early. They like to really cherry pick their candidates. And this particular airline has a lot going for it. In it doesn't have a union. It has a base. It has really great bases, has really great flying, and has some really happy employees. And the competition to get into that one is fierce. And they, like I say, they do a lot of the weeding out before you get to the face-to-face. And then another one who has its headquarters in Chicago, they seem to do more of the weeding out during the training. And when you go to training, once you get a conditional job offer, you have to go to, this is true with all the airlines, you have to go to a largely unpaid, there's some stipends and sign-on bonuses if you make it through. If you make it through, you have to go to this training in another city. It's really difficult and it's stressful. And one particular airline, that's kind of where they do a lot of their weeding out, is they see who can make it through the training. And that's kind of their benchmark. And other ones, they have the hiring event. They'll do the personality assessment and they'll weed people out that way. And the personality assessment, that really kind of makes the cream rise to the top. And then you go to the training, and that particular airline is headquartered in Dallas. And they're pretty standard, but they don't open, they're the largest and they don't open their window all that often. And when they do, they just get flooded. All the airlines, when they open the applications, it gets flooded, because a recent statistic said, for every one person who gets hired, 200 people get rejected from the legacy carriers, the big ones. So it's competitive and you want to be ready. And it doesn't mean that, I'm not trying to scare you, but I would rather you be really well prepared if this is something you want to do, because the training is like Barbie boot camp. It's like joining, like when you join the army and you go through that intense boot camp, and you've seen enough movies like, I don't know, Stripes comes to mind, and An Officer and a Gentleman. Not everybody makes it through. For different reasons, people start dropping, and you want to really stack the deck so that you make it through the training.
Well, let me ask you this. Is the training difficult because of the hours, the material you need to learn, the testing?
All of the above. It's taking people. Customer service people, friendly people, and sitting them in a classroom for 6 days a week for 6 weeks. It's an unfamiliar environment. You're taking them away from everything that's familiar, and you're making them focus on FAA requirements and aircraft types and safety equipment and evacuations and ditching exercises and all sorts of things. And here you are in this unfamiliar place and you have to share a hotel room, living in a hotel, you have to share a hotel room with a same-sex roommate, and maybe you like them, maybe you don't. And you go back at night to the hotel and you have to study, and you have to study a lot. And there's a test almost every 3 days about. There's another test, and you have to be familiar with, depending on the airline, several different types of airplanes. And the training, in 6 weeks, I think I spent 2 days on how to serve the customers. And it was just kind of, this is how the carts work. This is where, you know, this is how we store things for taxi takeoff. It was still safety related even. And 90% of our job is customer service, like serving drinks and giving out food and selling food. But 90% of training is safety related, probably even more than that. That's probably even not even a good estimate. It's all airplanes and evacuations. It's all that stuff that the FAA mandates that every crew member knows.
Yeah, at my last tech startup, one of my employees was a trainer for United Airlines. She talked about the fact that the immense amount of training that they went through for all the horrible things that could happen. If someone ditches the plane in the Hudson River, they have to be prepared for it.
I remember when that happened. I was in Manhattan when Captain Sully landed that U.S. Air flight. And I knew, had I been on that flight, that I would be totally ready for whatever happened. In fact, about 2 weeks ago, I had what is known as an aborted takeoff. And that oftentimes results in an evacuation. And I've only had 2 or 3 emergencies like that in my 19-year career. I've had some medical emergencies. This is a little different when it's like an aircraft emergency. And I was so calm. I was absolutely ready for it. And that's just amazing. The training that the airlines give you is really, really good. I can't understate enough, because it took me, like this normal woman, and turned her in 6 weeks into a first responder, really, a safety professional. It's amazing what they can accomplish in such little time.
Yeah, most people don't realize that, you know, you're essentially being stuffed inside of a metal tube. And if anything goes wrong, there's no calling 911.
No, you call your flight attendant.
If you had one piece of advice for someone who says, you know what, I want to go be a flight attendant and they're over 50, what would that one piece of advice be?
One piece. The first thing that you should do, because not everybody ages the same. There are some people who are 55 who are in much better physical shape than other 55-year-olds. And I'm just using 55 as a number. Go see if you can open your garage door in the manual mode. So bend down, grab that door, and then lift it up and see if you can get it all the way open. And then can you pick up a bag that's, I don't know, 30 pounds and lift it over your head? Those are two really good ways to figure out if you're physically capable of the job, because there are some physical demands on you. And in training, you're always opening and closing the aircraft doors and showing that you can do it. And the hardest one for me is the Boeing 767, because it feels like a garage door. So if you can do that, then you're physically able to do the job, which is huge. And then the other thing I would say is, because the first 2 years are very lean years and you will not be making a lot of money, and it would be very hard to supplement your income, I would have some savings available for the first couple of years. After a couple of years, you know, you get some pay increases and you get some seniority and things will get better. But for the beginning, have a nice little emergency fund set up. Those would be my two best suggestions.
Do you find most people go work for a regional or low-cost airline first because it's easier to get hired?
Some people do that, and that's fine, but I don't recommend it. If you want layovers in Paris, wait and get hired with an airline that has layovers in Paris, because the training is so intense that you don't want to have to go through it twice.
Well, this has been really good information, Joanne. If someone wanted to reach out and touch you and buy your book, how might they do that?
If you'd like to buy my book, which you absolutely should, if you're even considering this, or if you even know somebody who might be considering this, you can go to my website, and that is www.desiretheskies.com. And if you want to reach out to me, you can email me at hello@JoanneWebb, and that's JoanneWebb.net. And I'd love to hear from you. And I'd love to even answer any questions that you have.
Do you have an online course?
I actually have two online courses. I have one to just get you ready to start applying, and that's called the Prepare to Takeoff course. And I have another course, which is a premier course, which just gives you every single thing that you could possibly need to know to get your wings as soon as possible. And that one I recommend for somebody who really just doesn't want to wait. That's for the person who knows that life is short, really values their time. Because if you apply to an airline and you don't get hired, then you have to wait 6 months to reapply to that airline. And if it's the airline you really want, you know, you do that twice, you don't get hired twice, that's a full year. And that's a year of pay raises, a year of seniority, and it's just not worth it. The money that you would spend on my online course, you would make in one pay raise in like 2 months. So it's very worth it to take the online course because it'll give you everything that you need to know to get your wings as quickly and efficiently as possible. And it even gives you study tips and tips on making it the first 2 years, which is where most people end up quitting because they didn't realize everything that goes into this career change when they started applying. But I've got you covered. And my course, my premier course, really takes care of you up until the 2 year mark. And then, so to speak, I kick you out of the nest. But by that time, you've really have become a very successful flight attendant.
Yeah, I call it preventing people from suffering from what I call MSU disorder.
What's MSU disorder?
Make stuff up.
There you go. But if I had access to my course when I first started applying in 1997, I wouldn't have lost my job after 9/11. I would be making so much more money because 3 years of seniority is huge. It's a huge amount of money and time and better flying and better trips and more flexibility. So if you really want to do this, then go to www.getyourwingscourse.com.
Thank you, Joanne. This has been a wealth of information. And, you know, as I joke, I'm 6'4". I don't fit into metal tubes very well. And as I said, I've flown way too much. If I don't have to see another airplane or airport again, I'm fine with that. But there are a lot of people who want to go do this.
Not everybody had the opportunity during their career, their first careers, to travel like you did.
Thank you for being on the Repurpose Your Career podcast.
Thank you for having me. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this, and I really, really appreciate you having me.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. When Joanne approached me, I was skeptical, which you heard on the episode. But after listening to the Second Act Stories episode, Prescription for Change from Pharmacist to Flight Attendant, which I'll link to in the show notes, I was sold. Let me know what you think in the show notes, which will be at careerpivot.com/episode-162. Career Pivot membership community continues to help the approximately 50 members who are participating in this project. This is a community where everyone is there to help everyone else out. I am recruiting new members for the next cohort. If you are interested in learning more about the endeavor, please go to careerpivot.com/community. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Just put in the connection request you heard me on this podcast. Look for Career Pivot on Facebook and LinkedIn. You'll also find me on Twitter at Career Pivot. Please come back next week when I interview the founders of nextforme.com, Carol McManus and Jeff Tidwell. Thank you for listening all the way to the end of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. You will find all the show notes at careerpivot.com/episode-162. Please hop over to careerpivot.com, subscribe to get updates on this podcast and all the other happenings at Career Pivot. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Podbeam, Overcast, Spotify, and it's now available on Pandora. Hope to see you next Monday for another episode of Repurpose Your Career podcast.